All right, Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Mayor Carter.
Here.
Deputy Mayor Swatman.
Present.
Councilmember Baldwin. Councilmember Davis.
Present.
Councilmember Fullerton.
Here.
Councilmember Hubler.
Here.
Councilmember McClymonds.
Here.
And Councilmember Rock.
Here.
All right, I'd like to make a motion to excuse Councilmember Baldwin from this evening's meeting.
So moved.
Second. Oh, well, I thought I did.
You got 2 seconds for a third, maybe. All those in favor of excusing Councilmember Baldwin from tonight's meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you. All right, there's no agenda modifications. We have one continuation of the public hearing tonight. Madam Clerk?
This is a continuation of AB 24-103, ordinance D24-103, adopting the biennial budget for calendar years 2025 and 2026, provided for severability and corrections and establishing an effective date.
Thank you. I will now open the public hearing. This is your time to address the council on the item under the public hearing only. You have 5 minutes. Please state your name and address for the record when called upon. Is there nobody signed up? Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item only? Okay. I'll now close the public hearing. We'll go on to citizen comments. This is your time to address the council on city business. For those attending virtually, please click the raise hand icon at the top of your screen if you would like to address the council. Anyone with the raised hand icon or who called in, your mics and cameras will be enabled. You will need to turn on your video and microphones on your end if you are wanting to be seen or heard. We will start with those who are here in person and move to virtual comments afterwards. You have 5 minutes. State your name and address for the record, please.
Council Mayor, I'm Dan Decker, past council member. I reside at 204 70th Street, Bonnie Lake, Washington. You're poisoning our children and us. United States District Court, Northern District of California, case number 17-CV-02162-EMC, filed 9/24/2024. Just last month. The court has found risk in fluoridated drinking water. The EPA's own expert agrees that fluoride is hazardous to human health. The evidence establishes offspring of pregnant mothers' exposure to fluoride will have lower IQs. Babies will be born with lower IQs because of fluoride. The FDA agrees fluoride can cause brain damage. The formative brain is the one the government wants to destroy. Why else is fluoride in our drinking water? Fluoride does not stop tooth decay, contrary to some idiot's belief. Council can remove the fluoride from our drinking water. The court told the EPA, fix the problem. The EPA can't ignore the court. The pooled benchmark dose 1 point drops in IQ of a child is to be expected on for each 0.20 milliliters of fluoride. We have 7 milliliters of fluoride in our water. In the benchmark analysis, that's up to 8 IQ points lost. Fluoridated drinking water is a significant contribution to lower IQ. The EPA argues there are other factors other than putting fluoride into drinking water. Evidence to the record still establishes fluorinated drinking water presents injury to health. There's also the additive effect. Fluoride comes from natural occurring sources, fish, tea, vegetables, and even water. Thus, adding fluoride makes drinking water dangerous. The oxymoron of the federal government, send your children to school, get an education, come home, drink government-issued fluorinated water, and become stupid or retarded. There it is. That's perfect. Our government in action. Council, new subject. When I thanked Councilmember Huber the other week, I made an error. I said, Councilmember Huber, thank you for the fantastic job you did at the CDC meeting a few weeks ago. My mistake. I should have said, Councilmember Huber, thank you for the fantastic job you did with the DEI issue at the Finance Committee meeting a few weeks ago. My apologies. Thank you very much, Councilmember Huber. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else for the good of the order? Okay. We'll now start those that are virtual. You have 5 minutes. State your name and address for the record, please. Okay, I'm not seeing anybody. The city will now disable all video and microphones for those that are attending virtually. We have no correspondence. Next is committee reports. Finance Committee, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Finance Committee met this evening upstairs. We had a couple items of business. We went through the standard HR update things and notable activities. Of course, apparently we look like we have an offer out for a fleet manager. They'll be moving up to California, so from California up here, so we'll welcome that person when it gets here. Also, Public Services Director is still open, so we're looking for applicants for that. Be reviewing those shortly. And next item was our shared leave policy thing that we had a long discussion about. And that one, when we get to the consent agenda, we'll be needing to remove that one. We're still working out at the committee level. And then we had, of course, a recreation cost update, which will be an interesting one for council at some point in time, as the council is aware that they have previously allocated, the council did $148,000 overage for that particular line item. While the budget could sustain currently, we have previous year spend of $297,000 on that line item over the revenues. This year we're doing a great job at coming in, probably we project at $212,000 overage, so that is over the council's line of $148,000 that we as a council gave that particular department line item. So yeah, we'll have to figure out what we want to do with that. Just want to advise the council, because when the council draws a line, I didn't want to be one coming back and saying, hey, it's more than that. But not much. They're doing a great job over there. You know, it's a great service. We just need to figure out what the council wanted to make sure, you know, not stepping over the full council's authority there. So, and those were items of business this evening. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Community Development Committee, please.
Yes. We met October 15th at 5 p.m. upstairs. We went over AB 24-67, Resolution R24-67, a public hearing by the City Council of the City of Bonnie Lake, Pierce County, Washington, for the 2024 through 2029 six-year transportation improvement program. This will be on the full council on November 12th, I believe. And then we will be having a hearing, a public hearing is on November 12th, and then it will be heard at the council meeting on the 26th of November, sorry. and this is regarding the projects that we have already approved to use ARPA funds. They do need to be used by 2024 or 2025, I believe. So these projects, by approving this particular items that they're wanting to work on, including the roundabout at Angeline Road and Veterans Memorial, will allow them to apply for grants and loans as well as using the ARPA funds. Then we went over AB 24-109, resolution 24-109. This was on the consent agenda. They already had pre-approved a budget item for this, and so they are not exceeding the budget. This is for the SMAPS, which is the Stormwater Action Plan, and also the TMDL, which is Total Max Daily Load. They will be doing treatment testing on the Falling Water. Is it Falling Water?
Mm-hmm.
Victor Falls, sorry. Yeah.
Fennel Creek,
that's right. Okay, I have it somewhere. I just can't find it in my notes. So, yeah, and we'll be using, the request was to use Parametrics, which will be saving us money because they've already worked with our particular system. They understand our system, and they don't have to make any changes to the knowledge that they have of our system. So that would be the request. That is on tonight's consent agenda. Also on tonight's consent agenda was AB 24-110 and resolution 24-110. And this was to contract with Phil Ulbrechts, who is our code enforcement officer, hearing examiner. And we have already a contract with him. The first contract, it was only for 1 year, and additional contracts after that become 4-year contracts. He only charges us for the hearings that we use him for. He's very competitive in the pricing and charges us a fair price for contracts and fees. So we went ahead and approved that in CDC. And we will meet not next week because we don't have council next week. Mm-hmm. Our next meeting will be November 5th, Tuesday at 5 p.m. Okay, so that night we're going to do JACS, which is the Joint Agreement
Advisory
Council.
Yep.
Okay, and I forgot the word. I didn't have that written down. So that will be at 4:30 on November 5th, and then we will meet as a CDC at 5 p.m., right?
5:30.
Oh, 5:30, okay. Okay, so let's get that straight. So we're going to meet as a JAC committee at 4:30 on November 5th, and then at 5:30 we will have our regularly scheduled, modified schedule for the Community Development Committee at 5:30. Okay, sorry.
That's okay.
That was
fair
long.
Enough. Got it squared away. All right, thank you. And Public Safety Committee, who wants to give that report?
I think she gave.
Did she give one?
Yeah,
it was
last week. It was.
Oh, gotcha.
So you didn't meet this week. You will meet on November 5th, right? Or is it the second? It's the
second Tuesday.
The second Tuesday.
So
Tuesday.
You'll meet
12.
November 12th at
3:45.
Yeah.
Upstairs,
and she likes to invite the public, as do I, so
right.
Public is always welcome.
Absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate that. I do have one other report. Councilmember Fullerton and I completed the WASELI program cohort, which is the Collaborative Elected Leader Institute through AWC. It's been going on for several months now. We ended up all over the state, meeting with other leaders from other cities. I found it to be a great program for networking and for other ideas on how we can do some different things and whatnot. So it was a great program, and I would encourage other members to potentially apply for that at the next year. The next AWC meeting they'll have, we'll do a debrief on it, and there'll be an opportunity for other people to sign up for the next year. So it was such a resounding success that they want to continue it, which is good. Now we have the consent agenda, and we need a motion to remove AB24-112 and move it to November 12th.
Correct.
So moved.
Wait.
Does that work?
To finance,
on November 12th.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So moved.
Okay.
Second.
The motion is second. Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Very good. All right. That's been removed. So now we have the consent agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the revised consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Very good. Thank you. All right, we'll now move on to decision cards. I'll hand the floor over to CFO Sherry Ryerson.
Technical difficulties over here, sorry. We're laughing about how to get the microphone working.
Should replace that.
So tonight we're talking about general fund.
Set up.
Sorry.
Just saying we should replace those microphones.
Well, you know, that is actually a decision card.
Right.
Wow.
It's not scheduled for tonight, but if you want to knock that one off your to-do list, I'll certainly take I'll entertain a yes on that, and that'd be one less one we have to do on the 5th of November. So these ones are general fund. As you know, our general fund is not currently what an accountant would call balanced, meaning we're spending more than we're bringing in per year. Your ending fund balance should support any sort of one-time expenses. So you'll see a lot of these are one-time expenses. There's a reoccurring column. If it's reoccurring, then that's not a one-time expense, and there's a continual expense to it. So those are the ones you're probably going to want to look at a little more carefully, because it means there will be a continuation for future budgets. Okay, most of what you're seeing tonight are one-time expenses, so it'll be a little bit easier decision, but it will affect your ending fund balance. So first up, do we have any questions about how that's going to work and how it affects the budget? No? Okay. First up is Leslie, and she's going to talk about the community survey. She's requesting $20,000 in 2026. The mayor's pushed this through to conduct a community survey, and
I'll take it away. All right. Thank you, Mayor, Deputy Mayor, Council. Good evening. So this is, budget request is for to conduct a community survey. There's many benefits to them, and one is that it's a great opportunity to engage constituents. So with this, by conducting a community survey, we can assess the quality of life among residents. We can gauge satisfaction levels and understand areas in needs of improvement, gain a deeper understanding into their preferred priorities for the future of the city, and also can help guide decision-making, like financially, when we're looking at the budget in 27 and 28, because this survey is for proposed for 2026, that you can use this information as a guide to how should we allocate our funds. Like, what are some, maybe we want focus areas, we can take some away from another area and focus on other areas. So that is what one of the things for community surveys. So we do have, there's research firms out there that specialize in this service, and they can assist jurisdictions in crafting the right questions and distribute the survey so it's considered statistically valid. So as Sherry's talking, like this budget is tight, this is a great opportunity to get that feedback on how people would like to see their funds being used. Also, looking at like how their perception of the city, what services, like what do they love about Bonnie Lake? What would they like to see improved? Maybe we already have programs. How can we enhance programs or maybe shift our focus on certain areas? Maybe there's services we're not offering that they would like to see, or maybe there's something that we are offering that they're not interested in. There's not as much community interest. So looking at that, and that's what this survey does. A lot of jurisdictions conduct these surveys. We actually have never done one, but from my knowledge, as a city, we've done one through like the Parks, Trails, Recreation, Open Space Planning. But other than that, I'm not aware of a general city satisfaction survey that can help with guiding of our budget as well. So that's kind of an overview, a quick snapshot. This is just requesting the funding. We'd actually work with staff and council on what the survey questions look like. So that would be done in 2025 to gear up for 2026.
And I'd add, Mrs. Harris and I talked about this as far as, you know, engaging with the community and how do we do that and how do we understand and get, you know, access to what the community wants. And that this is just, it's not for a specific vendor. There's a bunch of different vendors out there we could potentially look at, and a number of surveys and different things that are available through different vendors. So anything that they would do would then come back to council once we were ready to do something so that we would have that input from council as well. Councilmember Hubler.
I love engaging the community. I think that is super important. That is something I'm very big on. I think my only hesitation is that when we did the Park Trails and Open Spaces one, even though we had a ton of input and we still had like this is what people are wanting in our city, when we put the Parks, Trails and Open Spaces plan together, it's still not done exactly the way that citizens asked for. So I want to see, like, if we're going to do something, that we're actually listening to our citizens. We're not just going, hey, but we feel that we need to go this way rather than what the city wants or what the citizens want as our voters.
Yeah, I think it's a great guide. It's like a guidebook, right? It's letting you know what your constituents are interested in and are thinking. It gives you a snapshot into that. So, like, for example, a neighboring jurisdiction just recently did one. And so they've been doing their own for years, but they really wanted to have a statistically valid survey completed with some certain very specific questions that they wanted feedback on that would help them guide their decision-making when they're developing their budget. So that's one avenue. So when you are able to use this survey as a guide for that. And also when we're looking at what programming we can do internally and then what services we can enhance or change. Yeah.
Deputy Mayor Swan.
Yeah, so I wondered on the pricing on, did you get, you know, you have 20,000 figure, is that, because you mentioned statistically valid survey, and mm-hmm. I'm thinking for $20,000, ooh, how'd you do that? I can't do my high school for a $20,000 survey statistically.
I reached out to some jurisdictions on what they recently spent.
And you just did a per capita kind of cost thing? Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was a general, yeah, of what I added a little bit onto it, what there was. So it just depends. So you do, you go out, and then you get, they would provide some costing. So I wasn't expecting this to be in 2026. It was originally scheduled for 2025. So who knows what, there might be a little increase, but.
Sure.
And the council can certainly choose to put that back in 2025. After having conversations with the mayor, we're trying to kind of even out the budget a little bit. This is coming out of your ending fund balance regardless, so you certainly can put that back in 25.
And then if we go out and it's over, it doesn't mean we have to move forward. Council can decide at that point to not move forward with it, but it's definitely like I felt comfortable putting 20,000 in there.
Yeah. Well, you know, because I'm not my concerns kind of match what Councilmember Hubler was talking about there with asking people what they want, doing something different, you know, being the elected official kind of thing and kind of worried about even like, well, you know, my question to myself is why am I here? what's the point of doing a survey of a bunch of people to get answers that, you know, I'm not going to follow or not going to pay attention to? Because even some of our data that we have that indicates that we should be doing certain things that are in our plans are definitely, like, you know, outright wrong. So it's interesting to get a statistical survey if that can be done for $20,000. I'd opt to do it sooner than later kind of thing if we were going to do it. I'd really like to see it done in 2025. The sooner we get input, the, you know, better off we can shape the future. If we do it.
Councilmember Fullerton.
Yeah, so with the $20,000, what were the surveyors offering? I mean, is it like computer generated? Is it, you know, mailings, or, you know, do they make phone calls?
That would be in, like, their contract that we would negotiate with them. I think they did mailings. I don't know if they did phone or not for the ones I spoke to. I didn't look into that directly, but I'm sure there's options out there on how can be done. Because it's a longer survey. You're asking, it's going to be more time consuming for the person to fill out, because you're really getting into why, like, what are their favorite aspects of your city? Why do you live here? What is, like, perceptions of the city? What's, like, the safety? Is the city going in the right direction? Do we have, like, and do we have specific questions that we want to ask them on certain projects, or are we going in the right direction? So that's going to take time and thought from the survey taker. So it's going to take longer. So I don't know if it's online or it's paper, but we can ask that during the RFP or Q process.
Councilmember McClymans.
Yeah, so this is an important topic for us, right? Because how do you get valid? I mean, I really loved the robust public testimony we had tonight about the budget. That was awesome.
It was.
Right?
Hours and hours.
Hours and hours of detailed input on the budget.
Millions and millions.
I think this is important. I like the idea of coming up with a more lengthy one, right? Realistically, I'm not quite sure the demographic that we'll actually get responses from nowadays. I could support spending money like this if we added a little more money and we made sure that in the 2025 election cycle, we put a few advisory votes on the ballot. I feel like that we'll get, we have 14,000 registered voters in Bonnie Lake. 4,000 responded in an off-year election, the 2023 election. So that's 33% of registered voters. I think that number is much higher and more significant than the number we'll get from a mailing. So I think the mailing is important. Good job on that. I think we have to do, I think that's a good thing to do too, but I think we need to couple it with something. The value also about putting a something on the ballot is that it is forever recorded what the results are. You can always go back and look. And it's also the people that do vote for us, right? So I think that would be my position. It's money well spent. I think we can spend a little more money and get even better results. And we could also ask the value of the mail, right?
Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, my question was kind of right along those lines. I was going to ask, when you reached out to the local jurisdictions, did you get a return? Did they have a return rate percentage or something that they had on the survey?
They were satisfied with their results. I didn't get a percentage, but for the size of the community, it was, I thought, fairly well. They seemed happy by it too.
Do we know how much is it to put something on the ballot?
About that
price. I think we talked about this before, I believe I gave you $25,000.
Okay.
The attorney can probably advise us a little better, but I know ballot is limited on how many words. So, I mean, you wouldn't be able to say, do you want to spend money on da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da and just go on.
Well, it's one question.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
But then there's more. Like, if we're already on the ballot anyways, there's some
it's cheaper to do it. Another yeah. question.
So here I am looking for thumbs up, thumbs down. Do you
Wait,
want to
$146 an hour just showed up. Wait.
Oh, she went away. Okay. Yeah, I think if you choose to do the ballot, we'll be talking about that at a future meeting. This is obviously not about a ballot. This is about whether or not you want to allow Leslie to move forward with a community survey. And my first question would be, are you wanting this in 25?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So
that's,
25,
that's
I can move
only.
That. And then my next question is, thumbs up, thumbs down. Okay, that'll be included in 25.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, next up is Regine, and she's going to talk about two things. The first one's a message board trailer. This is a one-time request. The next item she has is regarding a CERT team. You'll see the decision card is actually more than what the mayor has moved forward. He would like to see it at a little bit of a reduced cost initially. We had some great discussion on where we could control those costs a little bit. So it's a little bit different with the reoccurring cost of only $3,000.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. So the first decision card is for the variable message board with trailer. I worked extensively with Jason actually on this topic because you may or may not know, we only have one variable message board sign in the city that we can use to communicate with our public, whether it's in an emergency or a public safety incident, or we're discussing, you know, the status at Allen York Park. I mean, we've had to use the trailer a lot. We've had a number of incidents over the last couple of years where we've required two trailers or two message board signs, and we don't have two, we only have one. We've also had the situation where the one was out of service for a while. We've been renting a variable message board for quite some time to meet that need. So in working with Jason, we discussed looking at purchasing a second variable message board reader sign on a trailer. That could be deployed throughout the city for any number of reasons, day-to-day uses or during an emergency, so that we would have two and have that redundant capability. The proposal for this one also has the ability to add, it has a mast on it that raises 22 feet where we can place a camera. So we can see real time the status of traffic or road conditions, which is often a challenge for Leslie as the public information officer and trying to manage expectations on social media and the website for the public. So we did some homework and we found this vendor and a couple others, but the vendor quoted in this decision card is actually one we've used before with our police department's radar signs and such. So this would be a one-time purchase. We are considering the possibility of looking to fund it through Homeland Security grant as well, but they're very limited for the next 5 years. So the potential of that is minimal at this point in time, but not zero. So we went ahead and made the decision to submit a decision card to you all for consideration purchasing this trailer.
Questions? Councilmember Rock.
Yes.
What is the cost for renting one?
Can you answer that?
$20 a day.
The one we're renting, we've been renting for quite some time.
Weekly? Or
yeah, we just returned it.
It was a couple $1,000s, but it's all based on availability. So yeah, I think the one that we had to rent was a couple $1,000s. I think it was like $5,000 or $6,000. I'm doing that from memory, and I could be wrong, but I can, if you give me a second, I can dig around in my email, and I think I can give you a better number.
I don't need an exact number. $5,000 or $6,000 for how long of a period of time?
I think it was 8 weeks, but I could be wrong, and I that's why I want to say, before we say that's the number, just let me do one quick thing, and I think I can get you a better number.
And we have rented that multiple times, so that has been a recurring cost.
While he looks for that, Councilmember Hubler.
I had on mind asking if you've looked into FEMA grants for that. I know that there's been other cities that have bought theirs through FEMA grants, but so they're limited and they're just, are they harder to get?
So they're not specifically directly from FEMA. They're actually managed through the county, and they come under Department of Homeland Security terrorism grants, the state Homeland Security grants. That amount is dwindling very quickly, And the state actually sets aside what those priorities are that they're willing to fund. And those priorities are largely shifting towards cybersecurity currently. So that's why funding any other needed projects has been pretty difficult.
Okay. Thank you.
Deputy Mayor Swalman.
Thank you. So my standard question revolves around kind of pricing wise. I think the idea is sound, and it's kind of odd that we even have, you know, staff has to ask for such things, but it is new and kind of appreciated. But it's my understanding this is kind of, you know, it's the top end of the message board trailers if you go out there and look, right? You know, why isn't the thought from staff wise is that, you know, I can buy like three of these kind of like mediocre trailers or something, or I can buy this one?
That's a great question. One of the things that we really liked about this trailer was the ability, the 22-foot mast that we could attach a camera to so that we could monitor real-time like road conditions and weather conditions and traffic conditions if we were in the middle of, say, a winter storm incident. That tends to be where we struggle gathering data to be able to share with the public. And quite often we get requests on social media, you know, asking what's the status of 410, where we could actually position this out with a camera and we could see it real time and work with our public services team as well. So that was our thought process in going towards this. The price points down from there. The next one down is about 8,000 less, which is minus the mast for the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So
thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the question.
I was just looking online and I found just a regular one for $345 a day or $895 for a week. So obviously if you're doing that for any period of time, it's gonna go pretty quick.
Yeah, Jason's number is fairly accurate for the...
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Were you able to find something?
No, I said
okay. Oh. Gotcha, okay. Councilmember McClymans.
Yeah, is it possible to use the Flock cameras to give us any information?
Oh. Only if they have a license.
I think you were very specific on what you wanted the cameras to do. But thank you.
Like, when we drive our public service vehicle past it, ID the license plate.
And if it's stolen.
Report the conditions of the vehicle.
Just put Ray Jean in a car and drive around the city.
Pardon me?
We'll just put Ray Jean in a car and drive her around the city.
Yeah.
Like the little Google car. Councilmember Hubler.
I guess I thinking about like when you're talking about like having a mast on it and being able to put a camera up there. If a storm hits us or there's a major accident, it may or may not get used because may or may not be able to get to a location. So that I'm kind of like, well, do we need something that you could put up in the air and may or may not ever get to use. If we're in the middle of a snowstorm, it may sit in a warehouse somewhere because it's not safe for staff to go out and put it out. It'd be my thought, like spending money on something, would we actually get our money's worth out of it?
Yeah, I'm just gonna answer, throw an answer out here. I don't know if it's a good or bad thing, but I think a better idea of when maybe it would be very useful would be, hey, the park's really busy, the board is up, it's talking about, you know, how much parking is available. I think we've dealt with some of that stuff, but certainly in the past where you get a large backup for boat trailers and all this kind of stuff, then you could have a video of like what's going on, what the current park condition is, something like that. I think that might be a better use, maybe. I don't know.
I think we would find uses very regularly for this trailer, to be honest with you. I'm the emergency manager, so my brain goes to snowstorms.
What's that?
Yes, and with the fire, you know, we had very limited visibility. We couldn't put eyes. Well, I wasn't with the city at that point, but I know you guys had a hard time putting eyes on it. So, I mean, there are many different instances where we would use this. And the trailers that the one that we have and the one that we rented are used near daily. They don't sit in the warehouse unused. So the mast is just one component of it. The mast doesn't have to be used, but it is an extra component that we could use if we really needed it.
Oh, I should clarify. I'm not against the trailer.
Yeah, sure.
I'm hesitating on the mast with an extra camera on it. So the trailer, I think we do need. I think there are more opportunities for us to be able to let the public know what's going on. I just hesitate on will the camera and a mask get used or not.
Councilmember Davis.
Maybe Jason might be able to answer this too, but what's the lifetime on one of these trailers and then the maintenance cost that we have on our current one? What is that about running us, do we know?
Do not have that number on the top of my head. I know the reason we had to rent one was the software on the one that we currently had went completely bad, and we had to get a whole new unit, and they're coordinating that, but I don't have the total cost. I can research that and get that back to the council, but I don't have that total cost memorized.
Okay. Yeah, that was just kind of my question. If these boards are run off computers, how often do they have to be updated? What the cost of that is? You know, so that $35,000 cost can balloon fairly quickly if it's every 2 years we've got to update the software. So just that's something that I'd be interested in.
I have one in the other city I work in, and we've had it for 9, maybe 10 years.
Okay.
No issue.
Okay.
The update is every 1 or 2 years. I think ours is also, I think, 5 or 6 years old, and so it's just, now it's the board itself is fine. It's the brains that operate it are what we had to get updated. But I can get you an exact cost. I just don't have that number memorized.
Have an estimate?
No, like I said, I do not have that number in the back of my head. I try to keep as many numbers up there, but I don't have a room for everyone.
You do a good job.
Them all.
Councilmember Fullerton.
Yeah. So are we going to repair the one that we have?
Yeah, we've ordered the part.
Okay.
We're currently in the process of getting it upgraded. There's been some back and forth between us and the lab. We're actually the first group that's had to do this kind of upgrade. So we're working with the vendor to get it all fixed. And so they're working to get, I think they had to send it in for them to do the work, and now they're sending it back, and then we have to get it installed. So that's the process that we're in right now. But yes, we are actively trying to get it fixed.
Okay. And so basically this is going to allow us to have two of these reader boards. So we could potentially, if there is an emergency, say with a Lahar or something, we could have one at both ends of the city.
Absolutely.
So coming out from Enumclaw or wherever we need to put it, and then coming up the 410. I think, and if we have events going on, we've used those for events before also, so then you can get both directions. I think it is important that we have more than one. Like Councilmember Hubler, I'm not sure on the camera. However, I could see the need where it would come in handy, especially with an emergency situation where it's not difficult to get it out on the street, be able to put the mast up if it's not like a tornado or something, which we don't have here.
Absolutely.
But like for Lahar, we could definitely use it because people are trying to figure out, can I get up the hill in 45 minutes time? What does that look, or do I need to get out of my car and start walking up the hill? So I think for like a Lahar situation, that would really come in handy, because that's not going to really affect the weather on whether we could put it out on the street and get cameras of what's going on with the traffic. I think that would be a great necessity to have, at least for the 410 coming up Eli Hill or going down. So,
okay. Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, and I was going to kind of piggyback on what you said, Mayor, for the park. I think having that station at the park with the camera on it, so people don't have to drive all the way up the hill, see the reader board that the park is full, and they could actually view the camera. I think that would actually help our police department too with the flow of people in and out of there, and kind of go with all the improvements that we've made down your park. I think that would be actually a nice piece to add for people to have a live video stream where they could actually look and see how much park use or how much parking was available before they drive, you know, from their house or wherever they're going, and continue to clog the park area up. So I think I could see that definitely as a use for it in a non-emergency situation.
Councilmember Rock.
We currently have possession of the camera that we would mount. And if not, has the cost for that been explored?
We don't currently have possession of a camera that we would mount on it yet. We didn't want to jump into that wagon until we knew for certain if this would pass. But we would be looking, you know, at the budget for the next 2 years to determine the funding for it.
I think for me that would be important to know whether or not we would add that mass cost mm-hmm. to it. Because
yep.
technically it's kind of all one piece.
Mm-hmm. Can you purchase the deal and the mast separately as an add-on a la carte later?
I don't know the answer to that. I apologize.
Yeah, that's okay. Councilmember Fullerton.
Yeah, so that actually triggered some more questions. So don't we have security cameras at Allen York Park now? So is that real-time recording that we could access that for like parking and stuff in the summer?
We do have security cameras at the Allen York Park that were installed both at Allen York Park and at Ballfield 5. However, they're not continuously monitored, nor are they kind of monitored or available to the public. They're part of our internal security.
Okay.
And we can pull them up and look at them in real time.
And then my follow-up question also, because I was thinking when I'm reading through this request decision card, I'm thinking in my head that the camera was actually included with the mast. So now we're looking at another expense. So we would get this trailer with the mast, but we don't have a camera that we can mount on it. So that kind of right there makes me question whether we need the mast if it's not included with the camera.
Sure, I understand your point. As far as the camera, what I was trying to say is I would fund that out of my current budget that I have. So.
Oh, okay, so it would be different then, okay.
Yeah. Councilmember Kleinmans, did you have something?
Yeah, I'm just curious, are these electric or are they gas-powered?
So it actually has a solar charger. It actually has a solar charger on it to maintain the charge for it all day. It can also be connected to a generator if we need to. It has that capability as well.
Usually these have a pretty decent battery. They'll mm-hmm. last for a few days, and then with the solar deal, it might last a week or so before you need to bring it back in and plug them in. Any further questions? All right.
I appreciate the discussion.
All right. So I'm looking for thumbs up, thumbs down. I guess first question would be with a mast. Thumbs up, thumbs down. So most people are a no for the mast. Okay. So a trailer without the mast, is that a yes? I've got more than four. Okay. So trailer without the mast. So 27,000 is what I'll put this in for. And now on to the CERT team. Sure. Yes.
And I will send out responses to the two questions that we could not answer tonight because I feel like that knowledge still needs to be given to the council.
It's already been decided. It's included in the budget. So probably not necessary at this point unless it's just informational. It's already been approved. So, yeah. CERT team. At the reduced amount.
Yes, and the reduced amount is
$20,000 in the first year, $3,000 reoccurring for supplies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the CERT program is a program that it's managed at the local level, but the curriculum is developed and overseen at the federal level by FEMA. CERT stands for Community Emergency Response Team. It's a training that provides community members with, it's about 24 total hours of training. They learn different topics like disaster first aid, light search and rescue, how to use a fire extinguisher, how to be prepared for emergencies, a whole slew. There's more I could go into. There are about 9 units. And they do hands-on, so it's learning and then hands-on practice of those skills that they learn. And then it culminates with a drill at the end where they get to put it into action and practice on survivor victims that we bring in to act the role. It's a fantastic training. It's been actually in this region for more than 25 years, and there are tens of thousands of CERT volunteers in Western Washington. We, as an EPIC group, started facilitating some CERT trainings out of Puyallup And so Puyallup funded the first few classes. They were able to get the supplies and equipment for it and host a few, which one of them we hosted up here and Puyallup funded. But we are ready to be able to go ahead and offer those trainings ourselves to our community members. And so looking at some of the goals from with the mayor and the council moving forward and really wanting to focus in on, you know, healthy, safe communities, it's a good time to start really training our public to be able to take care of themselves, quite frankly. We know that if we were to have a serious enough incident, even a power outage, so I look to incidents like the 2012 ice and windstorm where we had residents without power for nearly 2 weeks. It was kind of a wake-up call for people to be in that situation and not know how to take care of themselves. So what I would like to do and what this proposal does is purchase the equipment needed to go ahead and host those trainings along with the supplies. The recurring cost of this is for $3,000, which I'm, to be totally honest, is a little lean. It's going to be a tough recurring cost. But that basically replaces supplies that we go through during the training and backpacks that the people that attend the training receive that have some basic supplies in it, like a helmet and some goggles and glasses. So that's CERT.
Councilmember Hubler.
Yes, ma'am.
I know the city of Vancouver has these. My sister's neighborhood specifically has it, and I know she is certified too. And they have an actual like cabinet, mm-hmm. in, or not even a cabinet, like an actual like little area where they house all of the emergency supplies for their entire neighborhood. She lives in a neighborhood called Hearthwood, and it's huge. But as you know, for us, I look at costs, and that's like a it's a lot to for us to absorb. And how we could get maybe other people to help. Is there, are there grants out there that can help with these kind of things?
There are not. So the grants that used to fund this program went away about 10 years ago. So jurisdictions are now totally funding the program if they want to hold it. So the upfront costs, I think it's important to know that the upfront costs for this, this pays for things like triage tarps and bandages and splints and inflatable mannequins that we used for them to practice their skills on, and the training device for them to actually learn how to use an extinguisher, which in and of itself, truthfully, can be about $20,000. So this is, it's a very strained request to be able to start the program, but it could get us off of our feet. It could get us on our feet to get the program up and running for sure.
Councilor Rock.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
You're good. I just lost my question. where would this be held?
We can move it around the city, actually. Okay. So we just need to be able to have space to train 25 people, and then we would have a location to hold our drill. The one that we hosted when we partnered with Puyallup, we had at the Public Services Center, but we can actually, we can be as flexible as we need to. I'm actually partnering with the school district. We haven't set dates yet, but we're going to be hosting one for the kids at the school next year. So, and they're covering the costs for their training. So,
when you partnered with Puyallup for the last one, how many attendants did you have?
About 20.
20 attendants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We only had about 17 graduate just because people had something come up or whatnot, but we did start with 20.
Did you have something? Councilmember Fullerton.
So I'm a little confused because the decision card says like 40,000, 43,000.
Yeah, so that was the original request. In sitting down with the mayor and working through all of the lack of funding, obviously he's made a lot of tough decisions. We talked about it a couple meetings ago. This was one of those, hey, let's try to get this started, but we don't have that kind of money to do it.
All right, and then, so how many, is this going to be like bringing these backpacks or these things to like one particular person in each neighborhood that's around?
So or? When they sign up to take the class, once when they finish the class, they receive the backpack. So if they take it, you know, if they choose to take it to work or take it to their home, or it's theirs to use so that they can respond if something happens. We do have the option. What works really well in other jurisdictions is to what we call credential them as volunteers, so doing running background checks and making sure everything is good. We have the option to maintain them as credentialed volunteers to be able to use them, you know, be able to engage them in response and recovery when time comes, which I mentioned the 2012 snow and ice storm, but the jurisdiction that I worked in, we actually were able to meet our match, our portion that we were responsible for under the presidential disaster declaration simply by tracking the volunteer hours that our CERT members donated. Okay. So
I was thinking like you could, we would want to strategically have people placed throughout the city so that if there is a disaster or something happens, then we have like neighborhoods that can be like, okay, we've got one person that's credentialed, they have these emergency supplies, you can come to this person's house. If there's an emergency, you can call this person. If we can't get a hold of 911, isn't working, the phone lines are down, you know, we have no power, we can't make phone calls, we can't get help, so we're stuck in our own little island world. So do we have people, and is there a way to let the communities know, okay, you have a certified helper in your neighborhood, you have a certified helper in your neighborhood, or there's somebody that's a mile down the road if you need to, and here's their phone number. So do you provide contacts to the communities for who would be there to help them, or is this just like, you know?
So I love where you're heading with that. You're kind of heading into that community hub model, which is like a step beyond CERT. So the CERT training is really to get them educated to be able to take care of themselves. We know from past experience in disasters that people help and they show up to help. And when they aren't trained properly, unfortunately, they oftentimes also end up wounded or, you know, having also they're also stuck, right, or something that we have to respond to. So the CERT training is really about giving them the training that they need to make it through and how to take care of themselves, their families, and those immediately around them. The hub component beyond that, that's really a step beyond, and I would love to get to that point. We just got to start somewhere.
Right.
Yes.
And how many people would you, you know, is it like, say we got 300 people in Bonnie Lake that want to sign up and take the class. So we can do that for everybody, or are we limited because of the amount of money that you have? So it's like, okay, we can take 20 people and that's all we got.
So typically we'll run classes of about 25. That's usually kind of our max. And that's just so that we can make sure that we can put eyes on what everyone's doing and they're learning the techniques correctly and everyone is safe. That's our priority. We have held larger trainings for larger amounts of folks, but to me, that's a little more advanced than where we would come in at. When we're starting the program, if we can fill our first class, that'd be fantastic. When we helped Puyallup get their program up and running, they actually had a wait list for 3 classes. So, I mean, they had a lot of folks who wanted to take it. So I think we would head in that direction quickly, but usually our cap would be about 25.
And she's also going to be limited by funding.
For sure.
Well, that was, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of where
the other part of that.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Councilmember Davis.
Couple of quick things. First of all, I think this is a great program, and I would be one of your first people to sign up for it. I think
it
would be great. How are the 24 hours spread out? How many days is that over the training or weeks? Or?
Yeah, there are many different ways that can be offered. The one that we did here 2 years ago, we did it in 3 full 8-hour days. It's kind of like over one weekend and we were done. So some jurisdictions do one evening a week for 3 hours, so it ends up being about 8 to 9 weeks depending on how they break it up. And some jurisdictions will do 2 3-hour nights a week, you know, so we can be as flexible as we need to be, but typically they're about 3-hour chunks. When I work with the kids, it's much shorter. So
So Councilmember Kleinmans, and then.
Yeah, so while there's a lot of merit to this program, I'm a definite no. I think the return on investment of, let's say we get 60 people to go for $20,000, it just doesn't pencil out for me. We have a lot of competitors in this space, the fire department, school districts, even my employment, I get this training at work myself, right? I'm sure if we took a poll of people in here that many of these people have already had this training. So I think it's kind of novel for a city to provide it. I'm trying to understand that use case. I understand training professionals to organize volunteers, but I'm not sure I understand the need to train individuals when I see, I would suspect that there's a large number of people, especially given the demographics of Bonnie Lake, there's a large number of people that already have and are capable of taking direction from a trained professional during an emergency. So, and that's because it's $20,000 and then it's $3,000 a year. Can we try working with homeowners associations? Can we try understanding who we would educate and how they would work, right? So that's just me. Sorry, I'm not looking at you, Virginia. No, I should be talking to the council. That's just me thinking of this, right? It's like the first responder space, fairly well done. I just look at it, I'm trying to think of, can we spend $20,000 on something that helps the citizens, right? More than this, because I think at $1,000 a citizen, it's not going to be a good rate of return.
Councilmember Hubler.
I love the CERT program I do, but I'm kind of in that same mindset of like, I mean, I personally teach my Girl Scouts, probably the most extensive you can teach. And my Girl Scouts can go out and they can tell you where to find water in their homes and anywhere they're at. And they know how to do all that kind of stuff because we teach them. So I'm almost thinking maybe there's a way to put a program together like what Girl Scouts actually put a program together that's like, here's all these different steps in a home as a homeowner or, a child, they can learn and they can have a packet. And here's the whole packet of steps. Like, here's places to go find water in your home. Here's, how much food you need to save. Here's how much, if you have power outage, how to, save food or, make sure you have emergency blankets and things like that. I think there's other ways it could be done that it's more efficient where we wouldn't have to spend a lot of money. We could look at things like Girl Scouts and what they put together. Sorry. They worked with another major organization to come up with this entire plan. And they put it out to us as leaders and say, hey, teach this to your girls. And then I teach the families as well. So a lot of them, and like Councilmember McClemens is saying, we have a lot of first responders that live here in our community. I think we're probably one of the largest first responder communities here. So I think a lot of them already know it. My husband is one that goes out. Everybody in my neighborhood knows exactly where to go. If a disaster happens, they know to come to our house and they know who to reach out to.
Councilor Fullerton. Sorry.
Yeah. So, the inflatables, is that, going to be like a CPR dummy? Is that what those are for?
No, CPR is not actually a component of the training because CPR teaches once you start it, you don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is, we don't want them tied up in doing CPR. We can train them in it down the road, but if they are stuck doing CPR,
what are the inflatables for then?
They're for demonstration, for bandaging and splinting, or we teach them things like how to do a head-to-toe assessment, so assessing for wounds. We practice light search and rescue, so we place them in different positions, and they have to locate them and extricate them depending on what the situation is. So we use them in a lot of different ways. And that was just, I don't want to get hung up on just the inflatables. That was just one component of it. It's more about no matter what training we offer, it will require supplies and equipment to provide the training. So.
Deputy Mayor Swatman.
Yeah, are we still, because I'm not, you know, on the Public Safety Committee there, are we still part of the EPIC system?
Or yes, sir.
What have you? You know, because, you know, me, I'm more of a regional kind of guy, and I probably definitely support what Councilmember McClymonds was talking about over there and some of the other council members, because, of, you know, to me, a disaster doesn't know city boundaries. So when somebody says the city should do this, I'm thinking, well, okay, why should the city, as opposed to the region or whatever, you know, regional preparedness type of a thing. So if we have an organization such as EPIC and we wanted to enhance to be able to, you know, let them have more classes, it's great to me. But to do it in a city ourselves, especially when our East Pierce Fire and Rescue, I just love those folks over there.
They partner with us on this, by the way.
Exactly, right, so yeah. So, you know, they're the folks that, you know, don't tell them they have the most money. you know, they're kind of an endless budget kind of a scenario. And they're the experts. So it's like, you know, are we doing, you know, how? I don't understand how all those relationships work up, because I'm not in the big favor of us trying to stand up a vertical, what I call it, training, as opposed to, you know, we have our police department, which knows the physical side of security and stuff like that, and they're the professionals that work in that space type of thing. So, you know, what are we going to be doing that we're not already doing? We're not. Does that mean we're not participating with some EPIC regional training? Then, you know,
CERT is not part of our interlocal agreement with EPIC. Just for a point of clarity, mm-hmm. I volunteered my time to assist the city of Puyallup, just based on my background, to help them get their program off the ground. We have discussed regionalizing a CERT program. It also takes funding. There's not funding for that and to actually carry that out.
Sure.
And we do partner with actually East Pierce Fire and Central Pierce Fire. They help us do the instruction specifically under the fire suppression, fire safety components, and the search and rescue components. The reason this is coming to the city level is because they don't want to own it.
They should. Just my opinion. Sorry. You know, they're the professionals of the emergency response. You know, that's my opinion, of course, obviously. You know,
yeah.
I seek the advice of the professionals and try to figure out how to do that, as opposed to standing up my own kind of scenario, right?
Yes. And my goal, and quite frankly, the federal goal in this program, is we know that when something happens, it will take time for those first responders to get to them.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure they can take care of themselves.
Yeah.
And I, too, live in the city of Bonnie Lake in a large neighborhood, and I'm part of the HOA Facebook page, and I can tell you that every time the wind blows, I get blown up about what should I do? Where do I go? We think we need to turn off our gas, and I'm thinking there's such a great training that you could go to that would teach you how to do all of this and be able to take care of yourself.
Right, yeah.
So...
And I would again hope that, you know, the fire department would play a huge role in that kind of a thing, right?
I hear you.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing mixed reviews on this. I definitely want to see thumbs yay or nay on this. Okay, so I'm mostly nays. Would you entertain this coming back if we solve our budget issues, possibly at a 2025 budget amendment time? No. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up. Is HR. This one is about contract negotiations. The amount you see in this decision card is $90,000. We've put this through at $30,000. Based upon the discussions we had, we believe that most of this will likely go into 2027. So it's kind of reoccurring. You'll see in the 2027-2028 future budget the rest of this to fund the negotiations. They're asking to use Summit to help them out again.
Thank you. So yeah, we are looking to, well, as you know, may know, our current contracts expire at the end of 2026. So we will begin negotiations in May of 2026 for all contracts with AFSCME and the Police Guild. We've used Summit Law in the past, and the benefits of using them are that they're the employment law experts in the area. They work with a lot of other cities and negotiate their contracts on their behalf so that they're aware of what the issues are and how much contracts are settling for. I think
from my experience working with them this last go around, that the contracts settle quicker than if it was just the city negotiating without an employment attorney. I think they can get things moving quicker and resolve the differences with their expertise.
Right.
And then this also funding also helps with certain grievances that most likely will happen, you know, with any contract negotiation. Possibly happen. we haven't had a lot of grievances, but we had some. And so, yeah. Are there any questions?
Yes. Swallman?
Don't we do this regularly, though? Because I recall we've used professional help before.
Just the last two negotiation processes. So this is not something that we used to do. Jenna had conducted this in-house. There were a lot of contract changes that needed to be addressed due to the ACA back in the day. And so she did have some attorney, and that was through a decision card process. Okay. The idea was to scale that back eventually, but staff has changed. That's the combination of the two words. Staff has changed since then a couple times. And so in speaking with the director and the mayor, they would support continuing to use an attorney. So,
well, yeah, I would, you know, I definitely support it. And I thought it was kind of built into the program, you know, because the years of negotiations that I've seen, the professionals definitely provide the buffer for a multiple of reasons that we need them, in my opinion, in their mix. They just, like Brian pointed out, know all of the issues on a much wider scale than we would individually here. They're, in my opinion, well worth their vast amount of money that we spend with them, because those are long-lasting agreements. I can't, you know, underline that anymore, that follows right along with needing somebody that really is, you know, in tune with all of the intricacies of negotiations. It's very helpful from what I've seen. Highly recommended. Check. Done.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Rock.
I'm just asking here because I'm late to the party on some of this stuff, but we had a contractual discrepancy since I've been around. And I'm wondering, is Summit the same company that we were using to represent staff when we had that issue?
They were, and in a way, it's nice to have them because they were at the table, and when they submitted the grievance, we had their notes and their expertise that said we don't believe that we said what they said we said, and they had a recommendation on how to settle it. Yeah.
It's not going to stop. It's not going to stop all grievances and that kind of thing, but it does help to have them
you're
at
right.
the table. Absolutely. Councilmember Davis.
Just a couple of things. So it looks on here in 2023-2024 negotiations, we paid just under $45,000, and now that cost is going to $90,000. Am I seeing that correct, or is that?
Yeah, you're reading that correctly. The initial request is 90. After speaking with the director, which would be Brian's boss, Chuck, after the mayor, John, and I spoke, he thought we could make pretty good progress with 30,000, especially in 26. And if there's a remaining need, that would be budgeted in 27. 90,000 seems very high. Agreed.
That seems like, you know, doubling the amount seemed fairly excessive.
And the one previously was 86,000 that I noticed in 20.
If it was, it was a very contentious time with the ACA changing our health care. And so I believe a guild member would probably remember that a little bit more than I would. But it was because the law was changing the healthcare, and there was a lot of do we have to's, what can we do to change this surrounding that. That's when the ACA got implemented.
Right.
Yeah. The Cadillac plans were eliminated. And if you didn't eliminate the Cadillac plan, so yeah, that one, it wouldn't surprise me if we spent that much. I don't know for sure.
And then my second thing is on the decision card there at the bottom where it says total project cost, it says 80,000 instead of 90,000. So I just wanted to point that out if that's
that needs to be changed. On page 100.
Yes. I'm seeing 90, but I have new contacts, so I'm not sure.
On 100.
All right, I think that was
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. So...
I think Councilor Huber has a question.
So when on this, it's asking us for 90,000, but yours verbally saying 30,000. So if we said yes, then we would approve 30,000, not 90,000.
Correct. And that's my spreadsheet has what is being asked and what we'll be going off of. But we thought it was important for transparency for you to see that the mayor actually did listen to the council's desires to limit some of this stuff on the budget, not just allow everything to come in at cost or request. I don't know if you saw him.
So
thumbs up. Is this a yes? Yes. Okay. So we'll put it in for 30,000 for 2026. Any remaining amount will be budgeted in 2027 if needed. And with that, we will go to Jason. Oh, you could have stayed where you were.
I'll come up here. I'll play the...
He's got two for the general fund, one-time purchases, a debris blower, and a ball field groomer. Take it away.
All right. So the first time up for the council's consideration is a basically a ride-on blower for the parks crews to basically blow the leaf debris off of both all the ball fields, ball field five, and also the Fiddle Creek Trail to keep those surfaces safe for walking, also prevent deterioration in the pavement or the field surfaces. Currently, we have to use multiple staff with handheld blowers. This would allow for one staff member to basically ride on the piece of equipment and do that work, and it would also be more efficient and have a stronger, I don't want to say blowing power, but a stronger wind, I guess, that would blow the material off the surfaces as compared to the backpack blower. So that would be the request. I know Deputy Schwartman will always ask why we're bringing small tools to the council. It's because we've exceeded that $10,000 cost. If this was about $4,000 cheaper, we would have just purchased it with our small tools. But because of that $14,000 cost, it needed to come to council for approval.
Councilmember Rock.
What's the lifespan of a Skeg blower?
Knew you were going to have a question that I didn't have an answer to. Most of our equipment like this, we do get about 8 to 10 years out of it.
Councilmember Rock.
Riding lawnmowers, stuff like that.
Councilmember Fullerton.
Yeah, well, we gave the city a gorgeous new park, and so therefore we added a lot of maintenance to that, and I think it would be helpful. It would probably also cut down on costs as the need to have extra people if we're just using a hand blower. So this way we can have one person doing the job of two or three people with a more efficient machine. And we're keeping our parks, open spaces, and trails open, clear, and helping with maintenance and wear and tear over the long run. I think this is a good purchase.
Okay. Councilmember Hubler.
What would the cost be for upkeep on it?
That I don't have. It would be the normal maintenance.
Would we be able to do maintenance on it in-house?
This would be part of all the equipment that we just currently maintain. We maintain lawn mowers and riding tractors and vehicles, so it would be part of our fleet management. And it would be under a warranty period. I just don't have that specific number off the top of my head.
Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, and I also think that this is a good purchase. Just riding along the Fennel Creek Trail with the Parks Department and seeing the amount of work that it takes for them to clear that trail with hand blowers. We would probably make this $15K back fairly quickly. So I definitely think that this is a good purchase for us to be able to maintain that trail. So especially as we see in our fall time when the leaves are coming down, it creates a nice clean trail for our citizens to use. So.
Deputy Mayor Swatman.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Councilmember Fulderson and Councilmember Davis there. Excellent choice in a tool, right? I will definitely be supporting this one as the paths seem to be, that I didn't even know such a device existed, You have to blow it with a hand blower on those paths. That seems ridiculous to even attempt. So that we can do this and maintain the trails for more usability and safety for the residences and the different parks. Hey, great, check.
Yeah, not to mention maintenance on people's backs that are
right,
carry those exactly, blowers around right? Like the Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Councilmember McClymans, did you have something?
I hate to be a Debbie Downer here, but I was really looking forward to like a demonstration, Jason.
If I could get one and bring it in here, I would gladly do that. And I also apologize that I don't have all the numbers right off the top of my head. Kind of the first time I've gone through this with some of these. Next time I'll be better prepared. But yeah, no, yeah, I wish we had one that I could bring into the ride it around. That'd be great.
You clear all the chairs.
And we all get a chance to use it. You know, it sounds fun.
Do a ride along with the Parks.
I'll volunteer my time.
I'm hearing most. Yes.
I want to go use this new piece of equipment.
Yeah. All right. Hearing yes. Council? Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. This is a go. Next up is the ball field groomer.
The other thing is a machine to help do the ball field grooming to keep the infields nice. We currently have to do that by hand. This would allow us to do it more mechanically and actually a little bit better job, providing better support for our community sports teams that use our ball fields, and also reducing the need to probably pump out parts of the ball field that weren't able to be groomed by hand. The machine's a little bit quicker at being able to do that and get it a lot more level. And I'm sure Deputy Mayor Swatman and Councilmember McClymans have a lot more knowledge about ball field grooming than I do. No, I was a football guy, so baseball is a little bit new one, and I'm learning.
There you go.
Deputy Mayor Swatman.
Yeah, I would definitely support this one also. You know, great tool. Interestingly enough, of course, for transparency, Bonnie Lake, Little League member, of course, board member, longstanding. So we've actually investigated a lot of this, but, you know, we also have, it's kind of, we're stuck within the city, what, the field, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, is that what, the four dirt fields right
four,
now?
Four dirt fields.
So, you know, a different set of equipment when you're talking about turf fields, and a lot of our fields in the area are going to turf in the future, maybe if the voters choose to go that way with a new bond, maybe, right? So it'll make that a little, we've actually, you know, from a perspective, looked at buying these machines because they're so nice nowadays, you wouldn't think that it's that difficult of a thing to do, but getting those fields groomed is a very manual, very labor-intensive process, and if we're going to have them, we need to keep them as playable as possible for people that are out there. So these tools are pretty amazing, and if you're looking for any optional accessories, I'm sure there are organizations that may well be able to shove you some funding. So
we will definitely consider that, and I think this will also really help get ball field three.
One of them.
Or two back into service use. We have one ball field that's just, the Parks crews have been working really, really hard to make it a better playable surface. We think this will get us back to where we have four really good ball fields versus three okay, and then one that really isn't able to be played on.
Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, $31,000 is a fair amount of money, but I also think this is a good investment for the city. Having grown up here and played on those baseball fields when I was a kid, they look almost exactly the same as they did.
Right.
And talking with the maintenance crews out there, it is very labor intensive to shovel dirt around and try to fill in the puddle near the first base there on ball field too. And this machine would definitely improve those infields, which improves the safety for the kids that are playing there. So I would definitely be somebody that thinks this is a good investment of our money. So,
okay. Councilmember Hubler.
I just want to say it'll take away puddles.
It will.
Right.
Takes away puddles.
But which are fun for kids to play in, exactly. But not great for baseball.
Right.
They're great for little kids to play in. Okay, I know this is a really stupid question, but where is ball fields 1, 2, and 3? I only know truly what number 4 is.
Oh, grass park.
That's numbers 1, 2, and 3.
So where you got ball field 4 across the street.
Right.
There's ball field 3 that's up by the playground area.
Okay.
Ball field 1 is kind of down by where the stage is.
Okay.
And then ball field 2 is kind of tucked away in the corner there underneath the trees. And that's the one that's in really bad shape.
Okay.
With the worst puddles.
Yeah,
I would agree. And Right now, when we get field rental, most of the ones that get played for games are one, three, and four. This would, if we could get two up into snuff, we're hoping that the different groups will be able to use that one as well.
I never realized that each one of those were numbered separately. I just thought it was Allen York Park ball fields. So I knew number four was separate, but okay.
Yeah, we have five ball fields.
One, yeah. Right, and five is the turf one, though.
Correct.
Yep. Okay.
So while I'm ready to entertain thumbs, I'm also going to throw a curveball at you, so don't close your computers. So thumbs for a yes or a no? Yes. Okay. Curveball. We have a lot of decision cards to get through on the 5th, and so I've asked Jason to be prepared to talk about the one at the very bottom of our list tonight, if you'll allow us. That would be the salt brine production system. It's $145,000 for the street fund. We're out of the general fund now. We're going into the street fund. The street fund has an ending fund balance. And we're currently getting it from Auburn and transporting it. So, Jason?
Yeah, I was just looking up what the ending fund balance for the streets.
I can look it up while you talk about it.
So, currently, street brine, if you've ever been out on a nice morning, cool morning, and you've seen it out, the white lines that get put on the road, it's a preventative measure to prevent the roads from freezing up so that we don't get ice buildup on it. And we call it brine, but it's basically a salt water mixture that lowers the temperature of freezing so we can keep the roads from freezing up. Currently, we do not have the ability to make it in-house ourselves. We have to purchase it from either Auburn or the county based out of their excess. So if they really need it, they're not going to sell it to us because they need it. The other challenge we have with purchasing it is, one, we have to go pick it up. And the big challenge is if we don't get it within the right weather window, we can't lay it down. So you also have to make sure that they're giving it to us within the weather window, because if the roads are already wet or it's already starting to snow a little bit and the roads are getting wet, you can't put the brine down because the mixture won't be right. So it's a weather window issue, and it's also timing and having to drive to Auburn, pick it up, and transport it back. We already have all the equipment to put the brine down on the roads, so this is just the system that actually, the big tank that you actually mix the water and salt in so you can get the right mixture. It needs to be about 23.5% salt in order to put it down on the roads. This would be the equipment. We're already purchasing the water and the salt, so it's a one-time purchase to purchase the equipment that will allow us to manufacture the brine on site. And this, in talking with the mayor, one of the things that he charged me with is how we can become more efficient, or as I said, efficient,
self-sufficient
during emergencies, which is why we've done a few of the things we've done this year. This is just another step where, in a freezing situation or a winter weather situation, we could make up the brine, get it in our trucks, and get it on the road, and get all the roads, as much of the road brined as we could. We could make as much as we need or not need versus dealing with just what we can get.
And your projected 2026 ending fund balance for the street fund is $6.4 million.
Deputy Mayor Swatman.
Yeah, so we've looked at this, in my knowledge, for years and years and years on the CDC when I was back there. Highly recommended, of course. It's a great thing. It also provides the ability, my understanding, is to lessen how ice actually will adhere to the asphalt. So you're not only providing an anti-icing thing, you're actually, you know, providing an increased ability to maintain the streets once they do get iced up a little bit. It's a lot easier to remove the ice off of them. So you can see that a lot of times if you've experienced that, where you're like, oh, there's all these ruts with this ice, and then you get into the county and you're like, what happened? You know, oh, that's cool. The city didn't have the ability to get brine at that particular point. So definitely, you know, it checks all my boxes. Yes, thank you.
Councilmember Rock?
Just a curiosity question. Are we maintaining the 410 Hill, or is the county maintaining that?
The 410 Hill, the hill is maintained by the state, but okay, not always, when they can get to it. So okay, we're at the state.
Could
so
we use, or yes, do we ever take that over if they can't get to it? We jump in and...
We do plow 410, so I would assume if we needed to brine 410, we would be able to brine 410 at the same time if we had that capability. But it's a timing issue usually with the state, but you usually were the ones inside the city that are having to do all the maintenance. So that would be the brining and the plowing.
Councilmember Hubler.
I'm completely for this because I live on a road that has
curvy and hill.
Yes, curvy and hilly, and has seen those ice and stuff on the road where you can't leave our neighborhoods, and I think that having that ability for us as citizens to be able to get out of our neighborhoods, and our police officers and our firefighters to be able to get somewhere safely would be hugely beneficial, and we're not waiting on people. I didn't realize that us as a city didn't have the capability to make this ourselves until walking the public safety or the public works building with Jason this summer, and then that opened my eyes going, oh, that explains why we aren't getting out there ahead of this more often. So if we have the ability to get ahead of this rather than behind it as frequently, I think it's positive in my book.
This is something I was pushing for right when I got in council and have been the whole time. Like Governor Swatman said, it's a huge positive, I think. Councilmember Fullerton?
Yeah, so have there been any studies on the effect of what salt water, putting it on the roads, you know, if there's any long-term management issues that like it would tear up the roads or it caused damage to cars or, and is there any other chemicals other than just the salt?
It's just water and
okay.
It's just water and salt. And we already put down, when you get behind and you have actually big snowpack, we use salt and sand already on the roads.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty much standard practice for maintaining roads. I don't know if John has any other feedback, but yeah, it's just water and 23% salt solution.
Okay. And it's what you're already using. We're just getting it from Auburn.
Yeah, we're not changing.
It's not changing.
Yeah, no change in what we've been doing historically, just ability to mass produce it in-house.
Okay.
Thumbs? This one sounds like
Member McClain.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So a couple of questions. How often have we not been able to do it because we couldn't get brine?
I know there has been times over the last couple of years when we haven't been able to get it. I couldn't give you like a number, but I know there's been a couple of years. Last year we didn't need any because we didn't have enough snow event, but I do know that there was.
I think it was 3 years ago when we had all that snow.
We could get no brine, and so there was a lot of outrage about why we weren't protecting our roads. I know there were some council members that were there. And the best thing we could do is put down sand and salt and then hope for the best, because we weren't able to acquire that brine because Auburn and the county needed all their brine and there just wasn't any available. So it's one of those things where it happens 3 or 4 years ago, but when it happens, it's a really big deal. And this will allow us to be more proactive. I will say, give us 1 year, because if this is in the 2025 budget, we won't be able to order it until January. So we might have to fight through one more winter. We're going to do our best we can. I just wanted to put that as a caveat that this would be something we would order in January. Might not have it till ready to go until next January.
Then the other question was, is this going to give us enough capacity to perhaps sell brine to Tahale or help the county?
Well, the county makes their own brine, so whether the county would want to purchase it from us, I don't know. But if we did have excess, we could sell it to any other jurisdiction that's looking to
Buckley.
If they have the equipment, we could sell it to another jurisdiction if we have excess.
Okay. I like how you think. thumbs up. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it was a good point. So if it's an important safety factor, we think provides a very good value, and my understanding is the fund already has $6-some-odd million for it. You know, the sooner we are able to order it, can we do that, the better off we are, because it is going to take a long time to get and install.
Since this is not the general fund, as long as Jason has the ability, yes. I can put this through easily for 2024.
I could go down to my staff tomorrow and tell them to order it, and they would probably jump on it.
So I won't include this in the budget, but Jason will bring this back sometime this
mm-hmm. Well, I will try. I will try. We'll okay. try to get it ordered. I will talk with Lance and Todd tomorrow if we can get ordered this year.
So how about this? This is obviously a yes. So if he can get it ordered this year, he will. If he can't, and that will come back to you because it's $145,000, so you guys have to approve that. If he can't, then I will put it in the budget that you see as the final budget.
Yeah.
Sound good?
Yeah, but I will email Todd and Lance right now, and they'll be on it 7 o'clock tomorrow morning.
And I'm going to try to sneak a couple more in here real quick because the fifth is going to be really. So I think this one is going to be super easy. Not yours yet.
Okay.
You can stay there. I think this is an easy one. I think this is an easy one. $13,000. I don't think we need Chuck to tell you guys that you need this. I think this is an easy yes that you guys will say yeah. Am I correct? Getting the mic system fixed.
It's okay. A wireless setup. Is
I haven't understood why it hasn't been replaced in years.
Agreed.
Beginning with.
All right, so I'm going to get that one off of the fifth. Mics are yes, that will get included. Do you want to do one more? I don't know how controversial this one would be, but it would be the other ones for the general fund. Chuck has to talk about because I don't know anything about them. But the tree removal in Viking Dog Park, is that one you want to talk about tonight?
That'll take
the
a while.
The fifth has a lot of items on the agenda, and it is also the election night. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're having a council meeting then?
We'll be all crying in our beer at home or
something. I'm a thumbs up on one more.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I think people are going to try to get out of here on the 5th as quick as they can. I think another easy one you could knock off is doubling the ammo budget. I don't think anybody's going to say no to that, but if that's something you do want to discuss, you certainly can.
I'm okay with talking about the Viking tree removal. Are you okay?
So that one's coming out of the park fund. I'll let Jason talk about it. And the park fund, out of memory, since we've made some changes, had about a little over $1 million left in it at the end of 2026.
How much was this one?
Hold on.
165.
165. Removing approximately 262 trees and planting 800 saplings.
So if you were on council last year, you know that when the winds came through, we had a number of trees that came down in Viking Dog Park that caused some damage to the surrounding properties, and there were some current claims filed with the city. Following that, we did go out and hire an arborist to have them take a look at the trees in the park. The trees have been contaminated with laminated root rot, so they will continue to come down. The problem is with laminated root rot, once it gets into the trees, it spreads from root to root. So the only thing you can really do is remove the trees and then start over with a tree species that is not subject to laminated root rot. So we would pick a different tree species. And at the same time we did this project, we would do the ADA path, which was approved as part of the CIP a couple weeks ago. So you basically cut all the trees down, remove all the roots, and then reforest the site with saplings, and then do the ADA project at the same time. Councilmember Fullerton.
So we're removing 262 trees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm imagining they're kind of large.
Yes.
But why so many saplings? Because they're going to grow up and they're going to become big boys too, and eventually they're going to need to be cut down or removed. Why do we need so many?
Because they don't all survive. When you do a reforesting, you're always putting in more than you are going to have. I think we had an email about this this week. Anytime, and these aren't even going to be large species. They're kind of more of the small ones like this. Once you do that, you're going to have a die-off with those saplings, and so you overplant it, knowing that you're going to have, through predation, you know, people, dogs digging at it, people looking at, you know, the things that happen to trees, weather, climate. You're going to have a die-off. You're not going to have them all succeed.
So how tall will they grow?
They're going to grow to full height, but I think when they get planted, they're only about that tall.
Yeah. But full height would be like an evergreen tree?
Yes, sir. There'll be evergreen trees. Or we can plant deciduous trees. We could treat it as a mixed forest as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sir Hubler?
We would really lose 500 trees. Like, it just seems like a lot.
200.
Because you're asking to remove 262, but you want to plant 800. So we could lose 500 trees.
Yes, and that's what's recommended by the professional arborist that we hired to come in and say, if we were to completely clear cut this and then to reforest it and get it back to the same level of tree canopy, what will we need to do? And that's their professional recommendation.
And I believe this would be a great use of, I think two meetings ago we talked about in lieu of, right? You'd
yes,
be able to use the
have,
in lieu of money for this?
We could, yeah, we'd have to look and see if it qualified for the in lieu fee money that we already have collected from the urban forestry count. And I think, I don't remember how much we have, I think we have 60,000 in there.
Councilmember McClymans.
Yeah, darn, I forgot.
Councilmember Rock.
Do we have proper support for the trees? So when 500 or so trees start dying off and we start getting emails from constituents,
yes,
at least we can say, like this last time, hey, we have, you know, proper ways to water them, and this was anticipated, and this is how we're caring for the trees.
And this one is a little bit different because it's not landscaping, so you're not creating a landscaping bed and installing irrigation. You're doing a reforesting plan, so you're going to put out temporary irrigation, and then at some point the trees really have to take on and do that success because you're not irrigate. We're not going to irrigate this like we did the ball field.
Which is why you expect to lose so many.
We expect to lose so many because we're not going to be able to. It's a different. Think about this as like when you drive out to Mount Rainier and you see the clear cuts, mm-hmm, and you see all that, the trees that got planted. That's what we're going to be doing, but at the city scale, basically a clear cut and then a reforestation.
Councilmember McClymans, you remember?
I did.
Okay.
I did. So the ending fund balance, so we're, I believe we're going to go ahead with some sort of boat trailer parking. Mm-hmm. Will that change our ending fund balance to a point where this is not tenable?
No, our current ending fund balance of $1.2 million included paying $4.5 million for the boat trailer parking and not accepting the grant. So if we would have accepted the grant, we would have been at a $2 million ending fund balance. Without the grant, we're going to be at a $1.2 million. So we'll be at basically $1 million. If we can use the forestry money, I'll talk with the CFO to make sure we would make it through an audit if we did it that way. Then we could use that to offset that. That's about another $60,000 that we could use as the offset for the reforest.
You have a follow-up?
Yeah, the other, I had one more, which is, is there any way to sell the trees? That's a lot of trees.
That was going to be my question.
From what I understand, and I think this came up when we did the WSU forest, typically what happens is the logger gives you a lower cost to do the work, and they make up their profit by selling the trees. So instead of them charging you full value, they charge you a little less, and then the difference is being able to sell the merchantable timber. I think that's what we did on WSU Forest as well.
Deputy Mayor Swatman.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting idea. I don't have a lot of input because I don't kind of understand a lot about what the project ensues. You know, I would probably not be nearly as opposed to something that came through CDC and was a little more vetted wise, because you know there's a lot of topography concerns over there and everything, and how we're dealing with that. And I don't know if this is like, oh, you've already got a contract for $165,000 proposal or something, because you know how are they going to manage the stuff and everything, and this path that you're talking about, and the use of the funds for the forestry funds. And
so we reached out last year to a company to figure out what it would cost to do this work when we had all the trees come down last winter, and so we had a good estimate of what that work would cost. This work is simply to do cut down, remove stump, and replant the trees with the current grades that they are. There is a separate project that we would slow down to make sure this was done first so that we could do them in tandem, versus doing all the work and then coming in and cutting the trees down.
So I guess if I think through it a little bit, there is a contract that you'd have to do anyway, so that contract process would review, and you would go through the CDC with that contract process so that they would get a look at then at that point.
Correct.
Okay.
We'd have to put it out to bid and take the lowest
and
bid.
You could still reject it at that point too, even though it's in the budget.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
Yeah.
That's where Hubler.
Oh, I think...
Oh,
this was before me.
Okay.
Sorry.
I was just curious, do we know, so
how much did the city have to pay out when those trees came down?
That's
a secret.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't part of that. What the actual, if Chuck was here, he could probably tell you the exact penny, because that kind of went over to risk management. But I do know that there were some payouts for damage for two homes, or for three.
Three payouts.
Payouts.
They call them payoffs.
That's a rock. Did you have something?
Okay.
Who wants to go?
I don't want to cut anybody.
Okay, so a couple different parts to my question. So what is this ADA path that you're talking about?
So in the parks plan, we were going to put a path. This has already been approved. I didn't know if anybody remembered when we approved the CIP. There was a putting in an ADA walking path through the Viking Dog Park. I was just letting council know. And that was already approved when we approved the CIP 2-3 weeks ago, that we wouldn't do that work if this was approved until this work was done,
okay,
so that we're not damaging the work that was already approved.
Okay. And then second is, I mean, you answered part of my question about the root rot and will it affect others. But so Beautify Bonnie Lake, after the big fire happened, the Sumner Grade fire, Beautify Bonnie Lake got tons of trees donated, and volunteers, we went out and we planted them up on that hillside above, like below Corliss's pit on that hill. We went out there and we trudged through that darn thing and planted a ton of trees out there. Can that something like that be done where the community comes out and maybe a community member, like I could say, I'm going to donate $10 towards a tree, and then we go out and we help replant these things? Is that something that we can ask the community to help with?
I mean, we can explore it. I don't know. It'd be one of the things that you'd want to do all at once, and is there a community member that's willing to take on the whole park simultaneously?
I'd say put it as a Beautify Bunny Lake master project.
I mean, we could, and we could look at maybe purchasing the trees. I don't know. We can explore that.
And we got them, I think it was from Weyerhaeuser or something. We got them all donated. And I think there was like 20 of us that went out with
yeah,
a couple hundred trees and had to plant them all, and we did it all in a few hours.
So, yeah, when we go to do the actual contract, we can explore that part.
So just as a reminder, this would come back to through CDC and council, so you also have the opportunity to, at that point, say, we changed our mind.
And when we bring it back through CDC, we will have that payout number included in the packet.
Councilmember McClyman.
Yeah, so this is one of those things where I think it would behoove us to go knock on a few doors around the Viking Dog Park and warn our constituents that we're going to scrape the earth off. And just assure them we have a plan, mm-hmm, or else we may have pitchforks right out here.
And I think some notification to the property owners before we do the work would be a good idea.
I think it'd be good for, yeah, you're right.
But whether it's council knocking on doors and plus staff doing something, I think letting people know, because we will have to shut the dog park down for a while we do the work.
A trail is coming.
A trail, yeah. I don't disagree. We'll need to include that in our project timeline.
And I just want to say, I'm not against like a professional company coming out and taking down the trees. I just think there's other ways we could, you know, like bring the community into helping to replant.
Yes, I agree.
We'll give you a chainsaw.
I am not going out there to cut down a tree, but
you'll be able to ride the blower to
work down the trees. Okay, I do want to ride the little blower.
I think we give her a chainsaw. I don't know. Sounds like this is probably a thumbs up. With the opportunity, if you change your mind, yeah. Okay.
And that's my last decision card.
That's his last decision card.
You don't have to ever hear me about
completely
me this
for this year. If you want to do one more, there's an easy one, I think. Copiers. This would be something that you don't want to do.
He's going to give us another one.
This would be it. They didn't want to do ammo. They didn't want to talk about it.
How many do we have on November 5th?
Oh, I thought it was
so decision cards, not a lot, but we also have utility tax to talk about. Jason's got the development agreement that needs to be discussed, and I think there was the rest of my decision cards. So if you can knock one out, we might be able to get out by 8 o'clock on the 5th.
Council.
Copiers
to you guys.
Copiers. So let me tell you real quick. Copiers used to be a lease. The reason that changed is for accounting rules. Leases have to be reported differently now. So I think we started doing this like 7 years ago. I asked that we start paying for the copiers. We looked at the cost benefit. It was actually cheaper if we paid for them out front. You wouldn't see this if it was a lease. But because it's not a lease and he's asking to buy all three at once, you're seeing it because it's more than $10,000.
It was, you know, my question would be, of course, is we haven't seen that analysis again because, you know, I'm kind of, you know, most corporations that I'm aware of go to like a management service and the we probably had before. Maybe it was through the Department of Enterprise Services with the state, you know, and you just basically pay per, they call it per click, it's per page. And then you don't, that's just what you do. It doesn't matter, you know, it's their problem type of thing. But again, I don't know the financial stuff behind that. I have to see that.
We used to lease them. And you're right. The costs of a newer lease go down versus the costs of something that's at the end of its useful life. They charge us a lot more per click, if you will, more per a color click than a black and white click. Like I said, you wouldn't even see this if we continued it as a lease, but I don't have a lot of accounting staff, and I didn't want to account for that as a lease in our new accounting rules. So I asked for him to look at the cost benefit, and it was a little bit cheaper when we purchased them. So that's why you're seeing it as a purchase instead of a lease. He will then sell these back to the company at, you know, whatever amount he can get.
Nothing, or you have to pay
a little, right?
That, exactly. That's what we're missing, I think, is that financial analysis piece, though. Because,
if you want that, you can certainly put this off to the next week for Chuck to handle. I don't have that
because he didn't even write it up, you know. He didn't write up any of his stuff, not in the packet,
not in this packet. No, you'll get them, you will get them.
I know,
but they weren't supposed to be for tonight, so you didn't get them. But he did write them up.
We don't have any information. You want us to make a decision?
No, no. If you don't want to talk about this one tonight, you can certainly put it off to the 5th.
Right. I think it should wait then, since we don't know. Just because we don't know those.
Yep, I can certainly put that in the packet for the 5th.
How about doubling ammunition? We've increased officers. Can we double the ammunition budget?
I don't have any. I don't know. You guys, public safety.
Yeah, right.
Do you want to vote on the ammo?
You need
so ammo's currently $17,500.
Ammo's expensive
per year, and the chief said we've got more people, more training, and ammo costs have gone up, and so he just wants to double that budget so that he can keep officers properly trained.
Yeah, what a thought.
My husband would love this.
Kind of important. For the record, that Sergeant Harberts brought this up and was very supportive of it, and in Chief Perry's absence, kudos to the sergeant.
There you go. Nice.
Kudos.
So are we, can I entertain a thumbs up? Are we good with ammo? We are good with ammo. Okay, so you won't see ammo, thank you, but,
I would actually expect at this point in time a senior, all the senior members of the police department are experts already, and they don't need.
No, I think there's something to do
saving
with,
us, you know,
diminishing skill.
That's so what I was going to say. Diminishing with age. Thank you. I appreciate all your time.
All right. Thank you, everyone. No more business. We are adjourned.
I didn't get it. Can we temporarily until I get there to finish with my mother's
I didn't get a thing, so I'm glad you came over and said I didn't get the invite or Haven Compass coming, so I'm
and they're like,
we'll get back on.
Yeah, that's gonna be good.